You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Lucy Badewe. Lucy pitched to me that she wanted to talk about rejection. And I thought, well, sure, that's an uplifting topic. Let's do that. That's a little bit of humor. I'm kidding a little bit. Lucy is a bright and sparkling personality, which you're going to find out in a couple of seconds. What Lucy and I talk about is her experience making the decision to not see rejection and rejections, moments of rejection, as a confirmation that she wasn't good enough. And so we talk about that and how that decision changed her life. I think you're going to love it. So let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Lucy Badewe, are you ready for a fun chat?
Yes, I'm so ready.
Yay! I'm so excited to have this conversation. All right, I have two warm-up questions. The first, I ask everybody, what part of the world you call home?
I recently moved to Austin, Texas, about a year ago. I'm almost at my anniversary, so this is, I would say, home for now. I'm very mobile and I love to travel, so I could move to Japan in a year. No one knows.
No one knows. All right, so now share with us, Austin is a fantastic city. Share with us something that you love or at least like about Austin.
I love the weather. And I know that's a hot take because some people don't like the heat, but I'm someone who doesn't really go outside until it hits 90 degrees. So I feel like I found my happy place. And then combining that with everyone eats outside and plays sports and there's so many tacos, it's a good spot.
Very cool. Very, very good. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Today, you and I are going to talk about a fun topic, something that actually many people wouldn't classify as fun, I don't think, but we're going to talk about rejection. For real. Yay. Okay. So we're going to talk about your experience in choosing or deciding to see rejection as the start for some very amazing things that you've experienced. Are you ready to talk with me about that today?
I can't wait. I think it's a topic that no one wants to talk about, and that makes me want to talk about it even more.
I love it. Okay, so you gave me a couple of examples, two examples that we can talk about, and we'll see if we get through both of them in the allotted time. Rejection number one that you shared with me, once upon a time, you were fired from a job that you'd only had for 90 days. Now, I confess, I actually sometimes really enjoy stories about when people are fired because I think, and also I just have to say this, I don't know if I trust somebody if I meet them and they're like, no, I've never, ever been fired. I'd be like, have you had a full life? Because, you know, I feel like this is a grown-up experience. And so how long ago did this happen?
I think we're coming up on about 5 years. So maybe even more, it might be 6 years. I'm so bad at time. But it was my first job out of college that I got. It was a remote job. It was part-time and it was in the pandemic as well. And I was just like, I did it. I got a job. Like that's the literal one directive you have as a new grad.
Yeah. And so you got a new job. So you graduated during lockdown?
I did.
Okay. And so your first job was a remote job. Were you surprised when you were fired? Like, or was it something where you were like, you sort of knew something was off?
I definitely knew something was off and I was very opinionated and I made those opinions extremely known. I guess I didn't realize it was that easy to get fired. Like I thought you could share your opinion and you'd have an adult conversation with your boss and they'd be like, oh, I see where you're coming from. Let's adjust the role. I didn't expect to just be pulled into a Zoom room on a Monday morning and told to leave immediately and not even get 2 weeks. So,
Wow. Was it like, I mean, did you think that this was like, was this in the field that you had studied? Like you thought this was an aligned job that you kind of were an aligned company, a possibility that you thought you would stay for a long time? Or was it just a job you took because it was offered?
It's tough. It was kind of aligned. It was, I mean, I studied marketing and I think I always knew I was going to be an entrepreneur eventually. I just didn't expect to be an entrepreneur at age 21. I think I wrote in my journal by 25, I'm going to have my own company. So I think I did see this as a job that I could have at least for more than 90 days. But I always knew I had a lot of fire in me. So I knew the chance of me like having this corporate career for 20 years probably wasn't my path.
Well, and I think that there definitely are corporate environments where you can have that conversation, like you were describing, or if somebody comes to you, there's different bosses and different setups where that kind of stuff does work. I worked at a startup in my early 20s where you really could have that kind of discussion. The leadership team, if you went to them and you were like, this is not right, there were plenty of times where they would be like, hey, what do you mean? Like, what's not working? Like, talk to us about it. Then but in bigger companies, we have a really defined job sort of thing, and you're like, no, I don't want to do this. They're like, fine, goodbye.
The funny thing is, it was more of a startup. It was a smaller, more nimble team. So I think that's why it surprised me so much, because all the founders I meet is they want to be challenged, and they want the role to be stronger, and they want more productivity on their team. So it was, I think, more just shocking than anything, of just how easy it was to be asked to leave. I was like, oh wow, okay. I thought there's a little more resilience there, but I guess not.
I think that, I mean, it's really interesting. So I was fired for a job. I was not yet out of school, but I was fired for a job while I was a student, and my friend had offered me this job, and I was doing a terrible job. So when they called and they're like, Amy, I am really sorry, I have to fire you. I was like, oh my God, I'm the worst. Like, I can't believe you let me work this long. I mean, it was like these, I was like, I can't believe. And it was totally the opposite sort of experience of yours, where they were like, oh, I thought you were going to be upset. And I was like, nope, I know that I suck at this. Like, and it was like a learning experience for me. But yeah, no. So you knew that you knew that you were not being like a super pliant, obsequious person, but it still surprised you, which I think is the more traditional response to being fired. Even when companies are in the, like, there's something going on and it's like, the company is in trouble, people still have a lot of surprise when they get let go. It's just not a pleasant experience. But you were fired from this job. So were you living at home? Like, was it like, did it put you in financial stress? Like, was it like a devastating emotional thing for even a minute, or?
I feel so lucky that the answer is a resounding no. I was living at home. My parents didn't really care. And I mean, I don't think I would have taken the risks that I did had I not had that safety net. I knew by putting like a paper with all my thoughts on my boss's desk was a risky move.
Oh, you Jerry Maguired.
I did. Yeah, I feel like that needs to be like added to the story. I don't want people to think like, oh, I just like, kind of made my opinion known in a meeting. No, I made my opinion very known. And so I think I would have never put myself in that position to fail that hard had I not had the safety net of living at home and knowing I could get another job the next day.
Yeah, so that's very, so I love that you did that. And I mean, it's a classic moment. I love that you did that. Okay, so what you do though, do you get another job, I think, or do you start your business right out of the gate?
I do start my business right out of the gate. So after this, I was on fire, just fueled by so much spite. Honestly, I feel like this is what's not talked about, is everyone starts their business because they like want to save the world. And I was like, no, I'm going to prove to people that I don't need to work for terrible bosses, and I'm going to do it immediately. So I sat my parents down and I said, I'm going to go all in on starting a business. And if I don't start making $5,000 a month in 3 months, I'm going to start looking for jobs again.
Wow. Okay. So I think that that's, I mean, I think that the story we hear is that people do start businesses to change the world. I think that people do start businesses when they're graduate students in graduate school to change the world. But I think that a lot of people start businesses because they don't have a job, is the truth. And that while you're looking for a job, or while you're fuming about the fact that you were fired, that's a really common reason that people go into a side hustle, or a small, like, sort of service-based business. I think that that is very common. It's not the story that gets told on entrepreneurial shows, where the focus is, tell me your successful VC pitch story. Like, that's not where that is. It's like, yeah, we saw a problem and we solved it. And that's a great story. But I've talked to probably, not in the podcast world, but just in my life, it's like, if you ask people, hey, why did you start your, caterpillar, gardening business? It's not usually because they think it solves the world. It's like, well, it's what I was doing and I didn't have a job. All
And
right,
I think that's
so
so valid. And I think your purpose and mission can come later.
Yeah, I think that you, if you put a lot of pressure on figuring out what the magical purpose is, you can some, I mean, sometimes it's there. Sometimes it's there and people do know. And so it's absolutely part of that. Okay, so you start your business and the connection then between being fired and the rapid success was, you say spite, but it's really like proving yourself, and you gave yourself a really rigid, that's very fast.
I'm aware. Yes.
Why did you pick 30? Why did you pick 3 months?
To I just partially is I really struggle with long-term planning. I've never been good at it. When people are like, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?" I'm like, "I don't know, hopefully alive." Like I've just it's never been how my brain works. And for me, 3 months felt like a lot of time. And
Yeah.
I say that to other people and they're like, 3 months is a lot of time to like build a business that's bringing in profit. And I'm like, well, yeah. So I wanted to set the deadline because I wanted to prove to myself that I could do this. I think when you're a new grad, there's a lot of those anxious thoughts of, well, I don't want to ruin my entire life by having 2 years of no job on my resume while all my friends are making 100K right out of the gate with their fancy consulting job. So I didn't want to do something so crazy that I'm like killing my prospects in the future, but I knew that I could do this. Like I think I just had this internal drive of I had so much to give to this company and they didn't see it. So watch me build a company that's going to completely make that experience irrelevant one day.
Did you show up to your desk every day wearing a shirt that's like, "Go ahead, underestimate me. That'll be fun."
Something similar. I bought my shirt. I bought a shirt that said "Minding my own women-owned business," and I had my mom take a picture of it with me on the deck,
Yeah.
and I posted it on Instagram. And it was, I think that was my girl boss moment. And then I've definitely calmed down since then.
No, I think that's fantastic. You mentioned that is my least favorite question that people ask 20 somethings in an interview. And I have 20 somethings in my family. And I was like, tell me, you know, so you go into an interview, you're 20 years old, you just graduated from college. And somebody's like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? It's such a bad question because your only perspective, it's like, well, 5 years ago, I was in high school. I don't know. Like you tell me, you know. And but it is they still do ask it. It's like such a funny thing. It is really real. And for people who are listening, the research that I've read, most people can only actually sort of conceptualize about 6 weeks into the future. Like that's like
That
as
makes me feel so
far.
much
Yeah.
better.
Yeah, that's about so you can say, hey, I want to do this in 2 years, but for like, what am I going to do day to day? Most people are about 6 weeks, and then you revamp like all the time, like you have to reassess. So, but I do think so. Did you hit it? I'm curious. Did you hit it in 90 days? Were you doing 5K in a month?
I did hit it.
Oh my God, that's so impressive. All right, very cool. Okay, so the next rejection that you shared was that you were cut out of a startup. And so, was this from the company that you started that was already making six figures, or was it some other concept?
No, so this was I, and I'm going to be intentionally vague a little
I
bit in
figured,
this
yeah.
story. Yeah. So, I had started an app with someone that I met. We just kind of had a shared vision and we were like, well, let's just go for it. So we, decided to start this. And then we were working on it for about a year. And then essentially what happened a year down the line is he was just like, didn't really see my value in the company. And there was an attempt to kind of negotiate that value so it would feel fair. But for matters, very plainly, it was kind of an egregious offer. And I just, in that moment, like had to fully walk away from something that I was working on for a year. So that one could argue that's less of a rejection. And that's me kind of seeing my worth and my value and walking away. But it was definitely provoked by being told like your value that you're currently bringing is like not it, and this is what I can offer you. But it was anyone who's in a startup and has ever had like an equity conversation would know that there's some numbers that are insulting, and just then it creates that same redirection in your life.
Well, I mean, I think you have to, at least part of it is absolutely rejection because if somebody comes to you and says, hey, you're not providing the value that I think is necessary. I mean, that is, that feels like rejection to me. So
Totally, me too.
I
Yeah.
totally honor that. And you had been working, so this was an app. So this is like development and startup. That is blood, sweat, and tears, and hustle
Yes.
to get off the ground. So you had been working on that for a year, and then to have somebody come and say, no, we don't want to move forward with you. That is a little bit crazy. And how did you feel? Like, sort of describe the emotions on the day that before you had the equity conversation, but when you got the call or the text or the Slack message that was like, hey, we need to talk, how did that feel to you?
I mean, I think all of us can relate to all of our organs falling out of our body when we receive a we need to talk text. So I think that's a universal experience with everything. I think I was truthfully so blindsided. With the first rejection, I was kind of not expecting it, but knew it was like a very real possibility. But this one hit me out of nowhere. And I think when we get rejected in a way where we didn't see it coming, that's when we go from that fire and that spite to just that complete devastation of needing to like pick up the pieces and just feeling so lost of, okay, what now?
Yeah, exactly. And so you were fully invested in this project when this happened. This was all you were
Yeah.
doing 24/7. Okay.
I did still have my copywriting business, but I scaled down immensely. So I knew it was going to be like a rough road building it back up. Like I never deleted it. I had my right-hand woman for the past like 6 years always as my rock and my business. But I mean, my income was nothing like what it was before I hopped into the startup.
Okay. All right. So very good. So you shared that you shared that this rejection or being cut out led to, and I'm going to use your words because I don't understand what you mean, so I'm going to let you explain what it is. The unicorn portion of your business that exploded in 2025. So sort of connect the dots and tell me what this means.
So after the startup fell apart, I mean, it honestly probably took at least 6 months of me flailing around before I started to feel fully connected to my copywriting and messaging company again. And in that time, in those 6 months of flailing, I rebranded, but I rebranded the wrong way. And I completely took my personality out of the business. And then the business tanked even more. And I was trying to get clients and I was trying to position myself as a leader and understand like where the world had gone because the world and business just moved so fast. And then after 6 months, I kind of had this realization that I keep trying to prove myself to someone who never saw my value, and I'm ripping my company to shreds trying to do that. And it was just a really honest realization I had with myself. And then I just decided to throw it all away, like all of this fancy website and this fancy brand. And I mean, everything I do is always extra because I'm extra, but called my brand designer and I said, I think I rebranded the wrong way. And I was like, we need to do another project together. And that's when I decided that I didn't want to prove myself to essentially this industry or this version of me that just wanted to be told like she's valuable. I want to create something that's actually me. So that's when I branded my right-hand woman to be sparklier than ever, more unicorns, more rainbows, more pictures of me just like dancing around the world. And I brought my personality back into it with my kind of sarcastic humor and writing a website that actually felt like me. And that's when I launched my membership, Unicorn Messaging, where I help personal brands and some startups become the unicorn of their industry through messaging that cuts through the noise and helps them become really irreverent. And then from there, I started speaking around the country on this topic of becoming the unicorn in your industry. And I mean, this is the Cinderella story of I went from just feeling so horrible to eventually, and I want to say eventually, like I think we have this idea of we experience rejection and then we immediately like full throttle to the next level. And that did happen for me. So I think when it didn't happen the second time, I thought something was wrong with me. I'm like, why don't I have that fire? Like, I'm just sad. But that is what ultimately led to me making some of the best career moves in my life once the dust settled.
So that is really, so when you say the unicorn portion, it's like because you use that word and that's what you do and
Yes.
that's what you help people do and what you're doing. I think it's really interesting because One of the impacts of traditional education, which I have no idea if you went through all traditional education, but it sounds like you went to university, but is that we indoctrinate people that it's like you do something in a way to get the approval, to get the grade. Like that's actually the system. And you don't know that you're being trained about that until something slaps you in the face and you're like, well, why am I waiting for somebody else to approve everything I do in my life? There is no approval committee anymore. I am the approval committee. Like what happened? And so that is a process of self-discovery that not everybody goes through, but a lot of people do go through at various points in their life. And it's super super interesting. All right, so the first one of these, you rise like a phoenix, like right out of the ashes immediately. The second story, you do reflect on the fact that you were hit, struck down. You were doing some self-reflection, like what was wrong with me? Like, what did I do to cause that? And you battled back. Did you figure out how to like recover and reposition from this just like because it is a part of your personality? Or is it something that you were doing education? Self-development, and like there were clues that led you on this path.
I think it's a two-pronged thing. One is I cannot sit in the process for very long. I really value taking the inputs that are given to me, listening to my intuition, and just making a move. Sometimes it's not the right move, sometimes it's the completely wrong move, but I'm always in motion. I think it's just who I am. So I don't think I'm much. My mom always jokes, she's like, you're not a dweller. So I think that's just one aspect of me that I want to be true to. But I also don't want to take all of that credit because I was working with an executive coach at the time. And I think whenever you go through something really hard, you need some form of support. I know coaching is not available to everyone, but maybe it's that friend who like always says the right thing, or maybe it's a group or a community or a Facebook group. But we're not meant to heal from things alone. I think our minds tell us some crazy stories, and if you just keep telling yourself these crazy stories like in the dark in your own house, you can drive yourself mad. So I'm a big believer in like someone needs to know what happened, even if you're not ready to tell a lot of people.
Right. Well, and there's right. There's a lesson in there, which is like you don't have to, if you are feeling like you need to tell all the people all the things, that's the exact clue that you need to find someone to tell something in private.
Yes.
That's the, you know, and there are different relationships. Like, and that can be a parent, it can be a friend. I mean, in theory, it could be a stranger. You can pay for that support. But yeah, you don't just have to tell everybody in your cycle, in your circle, like all the things that are going on in your life all of the time. But it sounds like you really did that very, very well. And I love that you throw in there that you were working with an executive coach because sometimes coaching can be a really powerful accelerator and helping people. All right, so you shared in the pitch that you wanted to talk about how not to feel like rejections are a confirmation that we're not good enough. And I want to bring that to the center, make sure we talk about that. So I know, like, so but as we get into it, I'm going to let you talk about it. But there are times, right, where somebody will come to me and they're like, yeah, you're not very good at this. And I'm like, I know. And the example I thought of this is that once, like long ago, when dinosaurs roamed the earth and I worked in an office, they came to me and they were like, Amy, we need a girl on the softball team. And I was like, you know, I know I'm sporty, but this is not actually my sport. Like, I will do this, but we need to set some expectations because I don't have any of the skills for this. Like, I'm not good at it. And then they came back to me like sh before I even got, I bought a glove, but didn't even get to play. And they were like, yeah, we found somebody else. And I was like, that's excellent. I will see you at happy hour. But so talk to me more about this, like confirmation, the process of feeling like you're not good enough and working through it.
Yeah, I think this is the crux of rejection is anytime someone gives us a no, we almost internalize and metabolize that no of we weren't good enough instead of it wasn't the right fit. And I think anytime we take something and we put it on our identity, of course, we're gonna not feel good enough. But like I always hear, like, you know, you can be like the juiciest peach, but if someone only eats apples, they're never gonna see that you're a delicious peach. And I think, you know, you can apply this to rejections in like multiple areas of your life. It's never about you. It's also never about them. I think it's really easy to also equally point a finger at them and be like, they were wrong. And like, I'm so guilty of this. Like, sometimes my ego loves to just take center stage and be like, I'm going to show them, I'm going to get revenge, like, whatever it is that you're thinking. But it's like, that's not that healthy either, because now you're in this energy of like trying to show them, you're still giving energy to the thing that wasn't the right fit,
Right.
even though that energy is not directed at like self-deprecation. So I think the healthiest way is just like, okay, cool, that was information. And now that I have that information, I can make different choices.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful tool, and I think that there is a tool in there to help that reframe it and switch it, which is that when you find yourself saying, "Hey, this is because of that," and you're like, "All right, well, if it's not that, if it's not me, then what is it?" And it's turning that into the question. It's like, okay, if it's not about me, then what does it mean? Like, what then? And
Yeah.
sometimes that'll steer you in the right direction. Other times you can just dwell for a while. I'm going to be honest, like there are times when I have just dwelled for a little while before I can like move through it. And that is very, very cool. Okay, so in a second we're going to do, but I love that you talk about that. It does sound like reflecting on these two examples, the first one, you can really see that you bounce back and you're like, I'm going to show you. Like you're wrong about me. And the second one, would you say that the first one was a smaller lesson than the second experience of rejection? The second experience was a bigger lesson?
Definitely. I think the first one, I was so early in my career that like anything could have happened that I mean, I could have like gone to clown school. Like I was
Yeah.
21. No one knows what they're doing at 21. So getting fired as my first thing, I'm like, oh, I guess this is a thing that happens in people's career. Like I didn't even see it as that big of a deal. But I think the second one, I was a little bit older. There was obviously like more blood, sweat, and tears put in. And it also like affected me financially. And I think that's when it was definitely more of a, okay, I don't know what to do. So
Yeah.
yeah, definitely I think there that is more of like the devastation route of rejection as opposed to the immediately like I'll show them route.
Yeah, and with the second example, which was a startup, it sounds, and I wasn't there, and I don't know all of the story, and we're not going to get into the details, but it sounds like you were invested and that you wanted that to work when you had to step away. And I think that that's a harder time to, that's a harder thing to release. We see that with relationships. Like, it's like, we want this to work. It's like, no, but I want you to like me. How can we
Absolutely.
make that happen?
Yeah, and that, I mean that's a like we could get into the idea of like controlling the outcome and stuff. And like I think something that's been so healing for me is anytime something doesn't work out, it's just like okay, like no one can promise that things are going to work out. You just have to kind of give things your all and also realize that like future you will leave if they have to. And maybe you won't get the chance to leave. Maybe you'll be asked to leave. And it's just realizing that like everything's okay. I think I take a very like spiritual view here of like you can't miss what's meant for you. And it can't miss you either. And that has given me a lot of peace. And I know it's stressed some of my logical friends out. They're like, why are you so calm? So I think it's just finding whatever words you can hold on to when you're in that state of rejection and just realize you're gonna build another life and you're not even realizing what that life's gonna look like right now, but it's gonna be equally as amazing, if not more amazing.
Love that. Love that. All right. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you do for a business right now and how you want them to connect and follow you after they watch and listen to this episode.
Absolutely. So my business is My Right Hand Woman. I mentioned it briefly, but I do messaging and copywriting for irreverent women-owned businesses who want to stand out and say the thing online. So if you're building a business, definitely head over to my Instagram at My Right Hand Woman, right spelled like writing, or my website, myrighthandwoman.com. But if you're just enjoying this conversation and kind of like the perspective that I take on things, also follow me personally on my Instagram at Lucy Bedewi, Lucy Lucy dot Bedewi on Instagram, and we can chat there.
That is fantastic. You have a special offer for the audience, which is
I
pretty great.
do.
It's a free quiz called What's Your Brand Messaging Superpower? And it shows you what your messaging superpower is, what the gaps are, and how you can expand your impact by leaning into what you're already great at articulating. I'm totally going to take this after we do this interview. All right, so
I'm
the
so
quiz is
excited for you.
free. The quiz is free, and I will put the link for everybody who's watching and listening is in the audio show notes, the YouTube description. The easiest way to get all these links is always to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then they show up in your email box and you just click on them. So that's the easiest way to do that. I want to thank you, Lucy, very much for that generous offer. Are you ready to wrap this up with my three random questions?
I'm so excited.
All right, let's do it. All right. Question number one. You're too young for this example of this, but hopefully you remember. Okay. So, do you like it when people make a fuss about your birthday? And the example I would give is in the olden days in the 1990s, which I think you're too young to remember, restaurants would come out and bring the entire staff and sing
Yeah.
and clap and do all the things, right? Is that something that you think is fun, or does that have you running for the bathroom?
Oh, I love celebrating. I love celebrating myself. I love celebrating my friends. I will make a fuss about anything.
Very cool. All right. I love it. All right. Today in 2026, do you go to the grocery store and do your shopping in person, or are you a person who uses delivery services like Instacart and all the others?
I go one step further. I use Hungryroot and they send me my groceries and also 5-minute recipes to make for the week because I truly cannot think about food. I will not eat if I
Ah.
have to think about food.
So I have a question, which is totally not part of the interview, but I'm totally, because I see the ads for Hungryroot. Is it just vegetables, or do they send proteins? Like, is it a vegetarian vegan service, or is
No,
it
it's full meals. Yeah, I'm
full
definitely
meals? Okay.
not vegan or vegetarian. I feel like I'm very protein focused. And I feel very nourished.
Very, no, I was just from the ads, I was like,
Yes.
okay, I just cannot figure out what I like, and I love vegetables, but I'm not a vegetarian, and so like we yeah, anyway, I was just curious about the service. Thank you for that Hungryroot suggestion. All right, last but not least, if you are a person who enjoys books, and this is a modern concept of books, like listening and reading, whatever, share with us a recent book that you think the audience might enjoy.
That's a good one. I've been reading, honestly, some fiction
Yeah.
lately. And this one I think is too dark to recommend. I'm not gonna go dark. I'm gonna actually go a little bit more uplifting. We just talked about rejection for an hour. So I really I know it's cheesy, but I love to have the You Are a Badass series and
Oh,
just do
yeah.
a page a day. I think it's so grounding, and I'm not someone who can read for a long time. I'm definitely a couple pages with coffee person and then do a light journal reflection. So if you want to kind of steal my process, I think that's a really good series to dig into.
So You Are a Badass. I think the author is Jen Sincero is her
Yes.
name. Yeah, that's fantastic. That's it. Lucy Bedewy, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you. I loved this conversation.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.